we're here now. Episode 82. Three brothers talking. I think we're ready to do this. We
I hope
are
so.
Off, you know, we're getting rolling here. And I think I think that tonight will be interesting based on the fact that Jeremy counted us in to start recording. So rhythm's already thrown off a little bit, but I still think we had a successful launch. So here we go, you know.
I feel like I launched it in really well.
You know, honestly, we might give you a hard time, but I think you did a good job. So I'll just be honest about that.
Thanks. I've been watching a lot of cool things like that to help me get ready to prepare.
You've been practicing?
I've been practicing every morning in the mirror. Like, well, all right, day number, blah, blah, blah.
It's paying off. This is David, by the way.
I'm Andrew.
And I am Jeremy.
And this is episode 82 of Three Brothers Talking, where we're going to talk about stuff as brothers, which is what we do every time we do this. And the fun thing that I have to bring to the table this week that I'm way too late in the game on, that Andrew already pointed this out, that this is like 2 years late. But last week, I had a Popeye's chicken sandwich for the first time.
Spicy or regular?
Spicy.
Oh, you got to go spicy.
That's the way to go.
And let me tell you, that I literally talked about it and thought about it for like the next 2 or 3 days after I had it.
Wow.
It's something. So that's
and David has already had it
if
3
Popeyes
times
is
since
listening to us. I would gladly I've only had it sponsored once. With sandwiches.
Oh my gosh. Well, and it's weird because I like Popeyes.
Yeah,
and,
Popeyes is good.
But it's a restaurant sort of like KFC. Like growing up, we didn't go to KFC. We had KFC when there was like a family picnic that somebody was buying KFC for.
You got the bucket.
Bucket of chicken.
Yeah.
And Popeyes is kind of the same way. Like our family honestly doesn't get KFC. We always got like, Popeyes.
You don't go there for like individual meals.
No.
Like yourself. Yeah.
Even though that's literally what they're made for, but not in our family.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Not in the Appelt Rohrenbeck clan. Faith loves Popeyes, actually. It's like if she has to choose between Popeyes and KFC, so which I would too, honestly. If I have to choose, it's going to be Popeyes.
Team Popeyes. Yeah.
And I like KFC too, but I'm not going to throw shade at it. But the Popeyes is.
I just like fried chicken.
Yeah.
I'll just eat some chicken. I love it.
Now that I think about it, that's what I like. But the other thing is, like, Popeyes is great, but you do have to be okay with horrible service.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're right, like, half the time.
Oh, well, yeah, I was like, I think it's probably the majority of time that I've gone through the drive-thru, my order's wrong. So
at least, like, one thing is missing or incorrect.
I mean, it's still good. Like, what I get is still good, so you just got to take it and take it on the chin. But
I guess God wanted me to have this today instead of the chicken.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, instead of fries, I got mac and cheese. It's okay, that's fine.
Yeah. They can get away with it because it's good. And
it also tastes good.
It's like have you ever been to another place that's really good but horrible? Is Penn Station.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never been to a Penn Station. Yeah, I've never been to a Penn Station that could get a sub to you faster than 10 minutes or 15
they're
minutes.
Good.
Like, it's so long.
It just takes a bit.
They take, dude. Yeah, like, they take their time. I was like, that Italian sub, though, is done right.
I'm a Philly cheesesteak guy, man. I've been on a Philly cheesesteak for a while. That's a good sub.
I will put it out there right now that the toasted, well done, put together Italian sub from Penn Station is the best Italian sub that I have had.
Well, I think what it comes down to is we need to contact Penn Station or Popeyes, you know, and we can do a taste test or a service test and see if we can get good service and a good food.
No, I think we need to help improve their processes.
Yeah.
They gotta
undercover boss it and say, like, how can we make this better? Undercover podcast. There you
undercover go. Undercover pods. Undercover bosses, except we're not anybody's bosses. We just go and work there. I don't know if that would be
thinking
that's
about
getting a job, I think.
This brings up, you guys remember, I don't know if they're still around. You remember Quiznos?
Yeah, man. Eat Quiznos subs.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
I don't think they're around.
Was that whatever those things, those rodent things were, yeah, no, that they had on the commercials?
It? I thought it was a rat.
Was that not like now. Was that not the greatest advertisement that was ever put together?
I thought it was fantastic. Like it, but I thought it was
you know
the best.
What was better? The Guinness Brilliant campaign.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The Guinness Brilliant campaign is honestly my favorite campaign of anything that's of all good. Time. I will still say brilliant to myself. I'm like, oh, it's two old guys saying brilliant. And then that's it.
But you think about it now, like everybody still knows about those muskrat things from Quiznos. And like they can still quote that like Jeremy did.
Yep.
Even though like, you know, that faded pretty quick. And then I don't know if they're the business wise. I don't know if they're still around.
I can confirm that they have a functioning website. Yeah, I'm at their website right
now.
Well,
they're not. I was like, I know there's like none around us anymore.
I thought they all went away from Ohio.
Yeah, they're all gone. I kind of liked it, so that's kind of a bummer.
I didn't mind it. That's like the what's it Grinders down the street is no longer there from us.
Mm.
I was never a big fan of Grinders. Faith loves Grinders and her dad.
I've never eaten a Grinders.
I mean, I was never like, oh, this is fantastic. I was passing the other day. I'm like, oh, that's not.
I don't
there.
Think I ate there one time.
Yeah.
Have you ever had hot
never
chicken?
Eaten lived, going back to lived chicken. Within 15 minutes of it my whole life. Never ate there.
All right. Can we go back to chicken? Have you ever had hot chicken takeover?
Yes, and it is good.
Yeah, I've had it, and it is very good.
It is very good.
It is expensive, but it is good.
Yeah. We only get it when like we're doing like, hey, the company's buying lunch today.
So that's like it's a Nashville hot chicken style restaurant in Columbus.
Yep.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, and it's very good.
Popeyes is like is good, but not as expensive. I would gladly, because a Popeyes chicken sandwich is not that bad price wise.
Oh, I mean, a Popeyes is 1/4 the cost of hot chicken takeover.
Well, even like, yeah, I mean, well, that's true.
So, that's definite.
I think this comes down to
they're just in different. They're in different categories, but yeah,
sort of like us. You know, we're the Popeyes of a podcast.
We're the Popeyes of podcasts. We're like, we're not that bad.
We gotta
stay.
We gotta stay in our lane. You know, a lot of times people come and listen, and they don't get exactly what they're ordering.
they don't even. Yeah, but I mean, that's why I don't tell them what they're ordering.
That's it. Exactly.
See that? You see that tie-in? That was great.
Andrew,
that's
you're a marketing genius. If accounting doesn't like pan out, you can go to marketing and change your name.
Just move
to
on over. Tell the Wendy's Corp that you can just move over.
I'm gonna
Wendy's, you can call it Andrews. That'd be a good way to do it.
I'm gonna tell Wendy's we need some version of those Quiznos muskrats to come back.
We can make a jingle for it. We could be like, eat Wendy's sandwich, eat Wendy's fries. See, there
I don't think you can. I don't think you can copy it.
You can't just take it.
You just need to copy it and just use it. Well, do something else. I mean,
don't do something like that as he says as he copies it.
I think
it.
You should do the exact same thing. Just see if you can buy it. I mean, Wendy's is bigger than Quiznos, so.
This is true.
They got the clout to just kind of do it and say, deal with it.
Say, I'm Wendy's, and I'm here to own your stuff.
If anybody from marketing is listening to this, I'm going to get in trouble.
I'm sure Wendy herself is listening. Wendy herself is like, wow, we need to branch out into subs and chicken. And by the way, where are those muskrats at?
Wendy's. Wendy, if you're listening, and we know you are, you know, we've got ideas. And we'll take a sponsorship. You know what? Here's a food opinion. This is maybe a topic for another time, but we'll be able to come up with more of them. So I'll just throw one out now and we'll keep this in our back pocket. But a food opinion that will make me sound utterly low class, to some people at least, is when I say that I have had the cold brew coffee from Wendy's and it is actually really good.
I've never even known they do cold brew coffee.
Exactly. Cold brew's this like artsy, like high level coffee. And I'm sure it's like cold brew concentrate that they just But here's the thing, like Panera Bread, I don't know what Starbucks does, but like Panera does cold brew concentrate too. Still good. Like it's good. So
well, it's like they all get it from virtually the same sources. And like, you know, you realize it's not that hard to do coffee. Like
it's fair.
Yeah. It's not that I know. I make it every morning with my coffee pot. I'm pretty fantastic at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's my like, I don't know. People who really like coffee will, and I'll pretend like I'll pretend to like nice coffee, but then I'll also think that it's pretty good from Wendy's.
Well, I was like, those people can come after you and all that. And in like, in reality, we know, like we can all say there's not that much difference between that and what you get at Starbucks or any of these other places.
Yeah. It's not that much. Starbucks. Yeah.
Andrew just jumped into company mode there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Andrew went into full advertising. Wendy's coffee.
He's like, I'm going to back up my employer. No.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's just a little opinion. Well, we can hold on to that topic for...
Do we have a coffee taste testing on the air? That'd be interesting.
Well, coffee would be good, but I was also thinking like opinions that will you know, wreck your reputation for
like
having...
being a Bears fan. Yes.
Exactly.
Or a Browns fan.
So I have no great transition to our topic of the day.
cold transition here.
Yeah, here we go.
Just do it.
Yeah,
we'll be right back after this, and we're back. And so we're going to talk about Ecclesiastes tonight, today, this morning, whenever you're listening.
Super fun book.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could say that everything was vanity before this, and there you go.
There you go.
Boom.
That's how we transition on this pod.
We do it 5 minutes late.
But if our listener hasn't read Ecclesiastes, then that doesn't make sense either.
Well, they should read Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
They should read it. Ecclesiastes is a really great book.
We should give them 5 minutes to read it.
Yeah. Now.
5 minutes.
We should sit here quietly while they read it.
That's going to take you
not
longer.
Not to comprehend it. Yeah,
it's going to take you. Well, I don't even think
it
I
might
can read
be a speed
it
reader. Maybe it's a speed reader.
Yeah.
Well, either way, we're talking about Ecclesiastes. And the reason for that is because our church is going through Ecclesiastes right now. We're about to finish it up. We have one more week, which is this week, which is also, as we're recording it, this is the last week. So we are doing this a bit early. So maybe we'll have, maybe we would have slightly different answers after this week, but I think 11 out of 12 chapters is good enough. So
it's about 90%.
We're just, yeah, you know, 90 some percent. We're just going to talk about more than 90%. If maybe, yeah,
I don't know.
And maybe I was like, maybe set the framework. Like, I mean, our church, like we took the book of the Bible, we go, you know, a chapter every week virtually, you know, we read straight from it. And then we're discussing it. And that's what we've been talking through in our community groups too, alongside. So yeah, like we've been in the text through 11 chapters at this point.
Almost three solid months at this point.
Way to break it down, Andrew.
And it's been, you know, Ecclesiastes is a really different book. I said before we started recording that it's a really weird book to preach from, because it's...
What you've done, I was like, Dave, you've done four, two or three?
I've done four.
Three or four?
Maybe five. Wow. I honestly, like, I don't know.
That's sorry, a 33, I almost was, 33 or...
I thought it was three, but we were gone last week, so I missed number four.
I believe I've done four, because I did chapter one, chapter four, seven, and eight.
Man.
So...
Look at that.
Yeah.
So how's it different?
So it's got a lot of poetry in the book. It's poetry and it's wisdom literature at the same time. So
yeah.
You know, the book of Psalms is poetry, and that's one level of difficulty to understand. But then there's the fact that it's like Proverbs and the Psalms put together, right? It's poetry and it's wisdom literature, and it's very figurative, and it's very like steeped in expressions and phrases of the day. So you're reading through it and you're looking at commentaries to help you out, because you're like, I don't know. I have no idea what this expression means. And I think also the toughest part of it is the purpose of the book. Like Solomon writes, I think Solomon wrote the book. I think that church history and everything kind of bears that out. Plus, internally, the text itself, I think, tells us that Solomon wrote it. But I think that Solomon's point as he's writing it, and that God has him write about, is to show the vanity of the world, and like to deal with the hardest and weirdest questions and the toughest questions that we deal with as people. Not unlike the book of Job, although the book of Job just specifically deals with suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Ecclesiastes talks to kind of on a broader scope, but it's kind of talking
about, in there, but it's not just the main focus of it.
Mm-hmm. And in some ways it's talking in backdrop. It mentions suffering, but it's talking about the things about the world that feel empty and vain and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult subject matter. And he's throughout the book, Solomon is taking, he kind of flips back and forth from a worldly perspective and a godly perspective. And so it's kind of up to you to like keep your head on a swivel to see which one he's speaking from.
Yeah.
So you don't take the wrong lessons at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And so I think all those reasons have made it an interesting challenge to go through. But I've seen, even in our community group, it's been, I mean, some of the things that we've gotten to talk about because of the book have just been really cool. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's a really rewarding book, but I would also say it's really rewarding as you read through it. You just had to take the time to study it and really think about what you're reading.
That's why, I was like, that would be my biggest point, was that like prior to going through this as our church and discussing it like through community group and stuff like that, like I had not, like you can read through it very quickly. Like Jeremy says, it's only 12 chapters. You can breeze through it. You can get the context of just like, oh, everything's meaningless, vanity, all that. And like, it's very easy to stay at that surface deep level and just breeze over, which is up until this point, that's really, I'd read through it and that was it.
Yeah.
And I had not, if you're gonna, like you're saying, like there is so much poetry that you can get entangled in with Solomon's words and, truly trying to, I think it's best to go slow and have commentary alongside of it to try to parse out like the reason behind the poetry that he's using.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get to a deeper understanding of, the heavy and the light and the good and the bad of this life that he's trying to kind of illustrate, it's been good to see a new depth to it for sure.
I think that one thing when you read through it, especially as often as I've read through it a few times, but when you read through it and you read through it fast without taking the time, like Andrew, you stated, you see the despair more than you see, I guess, the encouragement and calls to joy amid the vanity.
Yeah.
I think if you're just breezing through it and just reading it at face value, you see, okay, meaningless, meaningless, meaningless. Life is kind of meaningless. Or just like everything in this life, in this world, in the end, is going to just come to nothing.
Everything of earth is meaningless. Right. Yeah.
Whereas if you take the time, and so it can be, which so that and like similarly Lamentations, I would say, can be, if you don't take the time to actually sit there and read through it, you can see the promises and where they shine through. And like, because yes, it's poetry has wisdom literature and it's wisdom literature, but it's all kind of put together. But you can sit there and see the calls to a godly life not being ultimately meaningless.
Yep.
Yeah.
And not arbitrarily.
Right. Like,
not as if it's everything's meaningless, but just be godly anyway.
Right.
Like when you it actually shows you like
the promise
legitimately.
With that.
Yeah, like legitimately it's not meaningless. It's not the Sunday school answer of like it's good because it's good. Just believe it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's God. God being God means that his word is true. And his word being true means that like his commandments, his instructions for us are not arbitrary, but they're actually good for us.
Yeah.
And I think that Ecclesiastes, like it doesn't tell us to fear God and keep his commandments. That's like the last words in the book, right? Fear God and keep his commandments. It doesn't tell us to do that based on nothing.
Right.
It spends 11 chapters like explaining why that's the only rational, beautiful, true thing to do.
Right. It's not in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, and unless you examine all the poetry before that, then it's really hard to grasp the depth of those last final words there.
Well, can
like,
it be
truly? Yeah, like truly we sum it all up to get to this point that, you know, everything to fear God and keep his commandments is the truth and the beauty to be found in and amongst this world, mm-hmm. and all the things that we, you know, poetically that he's spelling out as meaningless and all that.
Yeah. What do you guys think? I can start it off unless you have one. But I you know what? I'm just going to start it off. How about that? I'm going to start off. I'm just going to start off with one thing that's been pressing on me before this last weekend, because I had just looked ahead in the book and read chapter 11. But we were going to talk a little bit about things we're pulling out of the book. And chapter 11, I think this is one of those things, I think if you just read it without the rest of the book, it just seems weird. But when you read it with the rest of the book, it makes more sense. But a few verses have really stuck with me. And they've been some of my favorites for a long time. Chapter 11, verse 4, he who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. And then verse 6 says, in the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, whether both alike will be good. And that's in the midst of a chapter that is reminding the reader, you're human, God is God, he's sovereign, he's in control, and he's good. So you don't have to live trying to be God, living fearfully. And I feel like that verse 4 and verse 6 are these simple lessons of, if you get in the habit of observing the wind, like if you think about a farmer observing the wind, he never is convinced it's a right time to actually put the plant in the ground. Mm-hmm. He's constantly worried that, like, oh, a week from now, the soil might be better, or the weather will be good, or, you know, hey, it's 70 degrees today, but it might be 75 and that's better. Mm-hmm. Or what if I, you know, like that constant fear about like making a decision, taking a risk, following God, but worrying that, you know, like right now the circumstances aren't perfect. And if we do that, we're never going to sow. We're never going to do anything of purpose. And so we're never going to reap anything of purpose, right? The man who's paralyzed by fear, worried about perfect circumstances, is just going to sit on his couch forever. And that's mm-hmm. what that verse 6 says. Like, you know, you're worried about like, oh, should I sow the seed in the morning or should I sow it in the evening? And he just says, you don't know which is going to prosper. It's up to God. He'll decide what prospers, not you. Mm-hmm. And so... Mm-hmm. Just do the thing that's faithful and obedient and right, and then you entrust that the results will be his. Because who knows, both of them could be good, you know? Mm-hmm. It's so easy for me to think about how both of those crops would fail, but God here in this in this passage is like, you don't even, like, God could bless both of them. You could have more blessing than you counted on. Mm-hmm. But it starts with you being confident enough to be faithful and bold, and live, you know, do the things you're called to do, even though you're sort of maybe worried about, you know, the circumstances not being perfect.
Yeah. Well, and that's what, and you kind of sandwich, and it's right because I don't know, I was trying to go through my notes quickly to see if I had anything else, but chapter 11 was sticking out. So verse 5, as you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. And similarly, like you said, I think that you're constantly sitting there saying, like, when the time's right, we'll do this. And I think back to James, where it says, like, you do not know what tomorrow will bring. You should say, if Lord willing, do these things. Or there's other, mm-hmm. obviously, other passages. But the standpoint of, like, we know what happens in the womb, but the child is born and all the bones and all these things build together, but how those things actually work and take place is still mm-hmm. a mystery. And we can't sit there and watch it. Like, if I sit there when Faith is pregnant and watch her stomach. I'm not seeing what's happening. I just know that at some point, depending when, you know, 43 weeks or what, 40 weeks or whatever, how long the baby stays in there.
43.
Hopefully not 43. Yeah. I mean,
that was our last one. But yeah. Ultimately, God is working and orchestrating all things behind the scenes. Similarly, like we talked about Job, we don't know what's all going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
We're called to be faithful today. And that's what, like, if you sit there and watch, especially, I think everything going on as a society of the past few years, and you try to sit there and say, like, the sons of Issachar, like, men who understood the times. And there's a sense of, like, having a big picture, but there's also, like, the sense of, hey, boots in the ground. Okay, I have to be faithful today. Mm-hmm. And today I'm called to sow my seed. And whatever that is, mm-hmm. it might not be what I would think is the right thing to move 100%. Or I might not think, well, what about tomorrow? Or what about this? But ultimately, all things are in the hand of God, the God who holds and orchestrates all things according to his will.
Mm-hmm. The one thing that when I thought about this and what stuck out to me, which was, I mean, throughout this whole book, there's been through all 12 chapters, there's multiple references to the word vapor mm-hmm. and mist and basically striving after wind. Is used a lot in like the poetic terms. And we discuss that a lot as a church of like what the meaning behind that is for all the things of this world that seemingly fade. And like the one, so if you look back a bit, like at chapter 4, very heavy chapter as far as, you know,
yeah.
talking about all of the evils that happen under the sun and in this world. So I'm not going to like, you know, summarize all that, but basically what stuck with me is like there just in verse 6 to pick it out is it says, better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and striving after wind.
Yeah, and, that's a good verse.
You know, yeah, and that was like, that's one that just stuck out to me as like he goes through this whole book of meaning like, you know, not, you know, there are good things to enjoy in this life. There is, you know, that whole chapter points out there is certainly a whole lot of evil things that seemingly happen that seemingly go unpunished to your perspective, seemingly take place, you know, basically to our perspective outside of, you know, God's perfect love and all that. And then he's, you know, the things that you're doing day to day, just to remind yourself that are you, you know, what are you striving after and what are you toiling? And are those things, you know, are you striving after the right things? Are you reflecting on the right things? And just to know that, like, when things get stressed or when you can possibly see idols creep in, then have that moment to reflect of like, okay, is it better here that I, you know, I sit in quietness before God. And that is better than me just pressing on and toiling over possibly the same things and other objects that might be out there mm-hmm. That I might, you know, I might be preoccupied with, or I might have let creeped into a spot where they shouldn't have, yeah. they shouldn't be.
Yeah. It's better for us to have half as much if it comes with that contentment and peace than to yeah. have twice as much, but to be stuck chasing after vanity, chasing mm-hmm. after the wind. Yeah, chasing after the wind is probably one of the better, I just love that example and that phrase that's used over and over again in here. I thought of chapter 3, verse 14, when it's talking about the fact that God has appointed all these times in life for hating and peace, for, you know, laughing, for dying and healing, for all these things. It says in verse 14 of chapter 3, and maybe this sums up the whole book, I've perceived that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done mm-hmm. it so that people fear before him. That which is, has already been, that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. So, yeah, just like we're talking about where the world currently is. And I think that this book is pretty good for worry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's pretty good for worry, and it shows you how stupid it is to worry. How stupid it is for a Christian to worry. You know, I mean, God is the one who what he does endures forever. What he has appointed is the time that comes to pass. And everybody else, even all the stuff that's happening, is vapor. It is vanity. It is a mist. It is going to be gone. It isn't forever like God is forever. Generations come and go. All these things come and go. But God keeps his work going, and it never runs out.
Yeah, and that's, I was like, especially today with where we're at as a society, like, I think that it would be a welcomed reminder to sit down and reread and contemplate over just Ecclesiastes as a whole. And it does have a whole lot to speak to contentment in today's, like, where you're at in today's world. If you are struggling with worries, if you're struggling, possibly it, you know, it certainly can speak to idols in your life potentially. And certainly can speak to your place amongst seemingly stressful, stressful, world situations and, seemingly evil things happening under the sun.
Yeah. Definitely. Any other thoughts from the book?
Not really. I mean, I like the way it's written, honestly. I've read it a few times. Not this in depth, actually going through it. I haven't really read it or studied it as much with the commentaries I've done recently. But it's definitely, it's also a good continuation. I guess if you read Psalms and Proverbs in tandem with it, thinking through, like when you're talking about the wind, David, I immediately went to Psalm 46, where it's like all these things are going on, the wind and the waves and all this stuff crashing around and the rumors of wars. And I'm like, and it has like just God's there, so be still. And that's what I kind of going through. It's like, no matter what, there's never the right time to take that step. And there might not be like this mystical, like I was listening to Vadi Bakum talk about, I guess how we've let mysticism kind of like the peace we have with our decision process. Like, no, like sometimes there's no peace with it. You just like, no, God's called me to do this thing. Is it in his word? We prayed about it. Okay, go. And trust God with the consequences.
Yeah.
Cause he's called me to do it. And I see that shining through, I guess, more than I have before when reading through this.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole having a peace, we could do a podcast about that. That's another Christian cliche. I've had as many discussions with people on that subject as I think I've had with people on any other biblical subject. I was talking to people and saying, like, I don't think you should wait for a peace on this decision. I think you should do it. There's a lot to those discussions, but
we wait for peace, but it's like sometimes the peace comes after you've already stepped.
Yes.
And you're in confident and contentment in the fact that you're in God's will in that moment.
I think you need to parse out the difference between having a peace about something and having your conscience be okay with something. Like, I would never encourage, nor should anyone encourage someone else to go against their conscience. That they're convinced it's a sin.
Correct.
But that is different. I think we conflate these two things, but they're different of like your conscience being somewhere versus you're just nervous about something. And I think scripturally, that's
more of you speaking into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And like where,
if it's a thing that you're like, oh, I don't like, my soul is not okay with this decision because I think it might be sinful. That's a conscience thing that you need to think about and work through. But if it's like, I'm just nervous about it and it's going to be hard. Like that's different. God calls us to hard, nervous, nerve-wracking things all the time. So there's that argument.
And that doesn't mean you can't pray for a peace, and like maybe that does come as you step, and like maybe, you know, maybe God does grant that in certain situations. Yeah. But so, you know, sometimes your, I think, like you're saying, like sometimes your mind,
it's a bad barometer sometimes.
Yeah, can have a negative effect on that.
Yep.
Possible as well. So
yeah, I think I don't know. I think that's what that Ecclesiastes 11 verse 4 kind of gets to. Like, don't observe the wind so much. Just do what you know is right.
Yeah.
So
fear God and keep His commandments.
Exactly. Yeah, and it'll go well with you. Like, do that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, and also to your point about the it will go well with you, if you read through the book, the it will go well with you may not be, and we read about in the book of Hebrews, may not be in this lifetime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's just reality of living in a sinful, fallen world.
Well, and maybe going well with you isn't about ease. Maybe going well with you has more than ease, you know? Maybe going well with you is blessing and living, that isn't comfortable. But it's there.
Yeah, and like I was like, and Jeremy, like to your point, like we're living in a world that needs fully redeemed. Like, so like, yeah,
of course it's not gonna be
it's all part. It's a, yeah, it's like it's not gonna be easy, and of course it's all gonna be a part of His plan. So like, that might not in your worldly circumstance wise might not be all hunky dory, but
yeah, one of the
you know, the ultimate
one of the most powerful verses in Ecclesiastes, if I can find it real fast. Ecclesiastes 7:14. In the day of prosperity, be joyful, and in the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other.
Yeah.
So your days of prosperity and your days of adversity, both made by God, both picked out with a purpose by God, and that ought to, in some ways, free us up from being nervous about things going easy or well. Because we know that no matter what happens, we're in His hand. And that ought to give us a deep breath. If we believe our God is who He says He is, that can help us take a deep breath and be ready to set our face to the work in front of us.
I was like, that entire chapter is worth reading. Like, if you are going through suffering or something of that case, like that can also, that is what can bring you peace.
Yep. Yeah, that chapter 7 is good for going through suffering.
Yeah.
It'll feel backwards at first. A lot of Ecclesiastes at first will feel harsh, or it'll feel backwards. But then you'll see really good stuff when you spend time with it. So,
well, it's not really completely, and it's not sugar-coated versus everything we read nowadays. Like sugar-coated, feel-good.
Yeah.
Blah.
No, when
but it, does, yeah. It does definitely take time to like you have to contemplate and parse out the words.
Yeah.
Like, because like, yeah, it all is twisted, and seemingly, like David said, like he jumps as far as the point of view he's speaking from in different, you know, in different chapter by chapter seemingly. So like, it is tricky to, you know, make sure you can walk through it slowly and understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you take your time with it, and you read things more than once, and you know, connect one chapter to the next and things like that, then it's easier to pick up on all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's hard to do light devotional reading of Ecclesiastes. Like you need to be coherent and focused a little bit, I think, to do it.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's our Ecclesiastes program. I think we nailed it. If not, it's over like a vapor. It's gone. Shout out to a very old, I don't know why I said shout out. That was lame. Make mention here of a little old song by Skillet called, is it called Vapor? Is that what the name of the song is?
Dude, I don't know.
I don't know. I
think it is.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure there's a song called Vapor.
They've got one somewhere. By Skillet, and it's off of the Alien Youth album, and I think it's called Vapor. And
it's a good album.
It is a good album. It's very much an album of its time. Like, it was, when would that be made? Like the early 2000s, late 90s?
Early 2000s, I think.
Yeah, like so it sounds like that, but it is good for that era. Very much so. Maybe
John Cooper, friend of the pod. Maybe get him on the pod.
Well, I'll put in a call to his people and see.
Yeah, call
that
Johnny,
might be
Johnny
that
Coops.
Might be my favorite
He's
album.
He's got a pod, right?
He does have a
yeah,
podcast.
Cooper yeah, stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. It's pretty big, but I think well,
not
shock,
as big as ours.
Shocking.
But maybe one day he'll get there.
Shocking that the lead singer of one of the biggest rock bands on the literal planet has a podcast and it's popular. Just shocking yeah. that would be the case, right?
I mean, I think he listened to ours and said, "I'm just gonna." Follow their formula and then make it better.
They've been doing it a long time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, so have we.
So have we.
You can't tell, but
we've also been doing it since the 90s. Yeah, I don't think so. If we were, we'd hopefully be better.
I was talking about podcasting. I was just talking about podcasting.
Yeah, maybe our podcast is older than his. In which case, you know, we have seniority, which is something to brag about.
Which makes you better. Maybe.
Yeah, that makes it better. It's been around longer, so it's better. That song, though, is really good. And I was listening to it the other day, and I was like, oh, this is a pretty Ecclesiastes song. But changing gears completely. I feel like I always give out recommendations about, most of the time, it's heavy metal music. And I'm going to give out a recommendation for the band Deus Vale, which is like a polar opposite of...
Nice. They're not making music.
No,
still,
yeah, they're
they?
Done.
They're done.
Yeah, they're done.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're long since done. But yeah. Completely different, like lighter alternative rock kind of stuff, and really good. I just like stumbled back upon all their old music, and I was not just nostalgic, but I was like remembering how different they sounded when they came out. So recommended. I think all three of us would recommend them.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend that. I jump onto your recommendation.
Perfect. Well, before this one gets too long, we should probably just end it, don't you think?
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Andrew, you okay with
probably.
That?
Yeah, I think it was pretty good.
All right. Okay. Well, in that case, this episode is done. On to number 83. The march to 100 continues.
Ever. we press on.
Ever and increasingly closer. To the big century mark.
Hey, we gotta get our video queued up. We're getting close.
We might actually run out of time. I think that as long as we stay on schedule, maybe we'll be ready to do that big 100 this summer. Maybe we might have to crank out a little bit faster. But anyway, we'll get to work on that. But it's episode 82 in the books of Three Brothers Talking. And until next time, we'll see you next time.